Good evening and welcome back to the JMU Sports Blog Podcast. I'm Todd. I'm joined as always by my buddy Rob. What's up, Rob?
Not much, man. How are you doing?
Doing all right, man. Just, I don't know. Got back from a big weekend of spring game festivities, which was really fun. I don't know. Back to mowing the lawn and taking care of the things I didn't do on the weekend tonight. So,
yeah, I was in the same boat. Yeah. I mowed the lawn today. Such fun.
Yes. Wonderful. But we've got some fun stuff. It's a really good time. We're not going to take too much time on sports tonight. We do really have a fun overtime. We sort of wanted to jump on here in, well, we definitely want to talk about the spring game a little bit and all the stuff around that. But we also wanted to say a big thank you to our old friends at Mossy Creek. Got to see them this weekend, Rob, the big 21st anniversary. The store is old enough to drink now.
Wow,
hard to believe that those guys have been there for 21 years. But they had a great day Saturday. I think they were really happy. They have never intentionally done it on the spring game day, but it has often fell that way. And that was a big benefit to them. So that was really great, especially because the weather was so outstanding on Saturday.
Yeah, it was just a gorgeous weekend all around Virginia.
Yeah, but definitely. And for our Harrisonburg friends who have done it before, if you get a chance, we would really appreciate it if you go by the shop and mention the podcast. You still get a free sticker, but just anytime you're in there, if you mention it, it's great. You might run into a number of large JMU football players in there. I think the leading angler on the team has started to recruit others. I think Mossy Creek is doing as good a job recruiting the current players to stay as anyone else in town, Rob.
Oh
yeah.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah. It's pretty good. So, especially some of the fat guys. So, who are not so fat anymore. The most shocking thing, there's a lot of good things about this game on Saturday, Rob. The most incredible thing is, and just hearing, talking to people around the program, you know, friends and family kind of thing. Kids are getting fit right now. Really getting into shape. There was really, really high praise for the new strength and conditioning coach and crew. And that bodes well. I think this spring has been some guys getting in shape in a way that they haven't in the past. And then they're going to be building back up this summer. But it was cool to hear some of that.
It is interesting how every time there's a coaching change in every sport, the narrative seems to be, man, this previous coach didn't have him in good shape. Like, and I'm not saying that's the case here, but it's like every year you come out of your baseball fan, come out of spring training, and every coach is like, oh, the best teams ever looked. Every time there's a football change or change in football coach, it's like, I don't know. They just weren't up to the standards. It's different. We're getting there. And I think some of that is just people adjusting to what they're looking for, but that is good to hear. It's nice to hear that, you know, strength and conditioning is a priority. I've been hearing nothing but rave reviews in terms of how the players are reacting to their first, you know, set of Chesney practices. This first spring, it seems to be, very well received in terms of how he relates to them as people off the field, which is, that's kind of his rep. You know, not only does this guy win and he's won everywhere he's gone, he's really connected with players and players' families. So it's nice that he's making that impact already. And that's the kind of news we're hearing from the players. And that's not to say that previous coaches didn't care, but everybody's different and everybody has different things they emphasize. And Chesney seems to really be selling that, like, total man philosophy where, like, he's going to come in and really build these guys up in a number of different ways. And that's great. I mean, every coach has their pitch and that's his. And if he lives up to it, like everybody says he does, the sky's the limit, you know?
Yeah. And his energy is all over the game on Saturday. I actually had a hard time. I've been thinking about it since Saturday. Saturday was gorgeous weather. It's a spring game. So, you know, there's only, like, take it all with a grain of salt.
I mean, spring game is basically like college football festival. It's not really a game. It's a good chance to get out there, have something to look toward to the players. And now we're starting to see as the makings of being like a big event for the JMU fan base.
So that's what I've been trying to parse, is how much of this was like me being excited about Chesney, wanting to believe in the team, and how much of this was like weather and just the perfect circumstances, because it was a gorgeous day on Saturday. But I haven't been to the spring game. I realized this, Rob. I don't think I've been in like 10 or 15 years. There was a time a while ago when I used to go when it was like nobody there. But even the people that have been the last few years, it was a good sized crowd. It was a larger crowd than regular games when you and I were in school. Like, you know, it was certainly like an FCS early round playoff sized crowd, you know, like 5,000 to 8,000 people. I mean, it was, and there was a number of people up in the suites and clubs and stuff. So I don't know like what that story was. But yeah, it was a good day. And obviously you have a lot of recruits and their families. What I hadn't thought about in the transfer portal era, and I did notice on Saturday, is just how many of the new players also, like their families, this is really the first time that some of the transfer in players, you know, all their families are kind of psyched up to get down there and take a look at things, you know?
And not just transfers, like we're now at a stage where early enrollees are a thing with JV.
Well, that's
football.
What I meant. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You know? High school kids.
That graduate early and enroll spring semester.
Right. And then you and I talked about this a little bit before we press play tonight. But one thing people don't even realize that I had forgotten about until I realized learned on Saturday is some of the kids who are transferring in are not here yet. Mm-hmm. The ones who are actual students. In particular, a couple of the ones from Holy Cross who are coming have not come to campus because they have to complete their studies and graduate from college in the next few weeks. So there wasn't even the full lineup on the field this weekend. Like I just had totally forgotten about that. You know, you
including some guys who are projected to get major minutes.
Well, that's what I meant. I mean, these were not like Dobbs is out there, but there are other guys from the Holy Cross crew who are expected to be real players. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. And of course, you hear some nefarious thing. Look, the funny thing to me, Rob, we're not going to dive into the internet's going to internet a little bit. But our old friend out in the Midwest, in the miserable city of Bloomington, one thing that cracks me up is like, if you are a coach and you leave, in this day and age of the portal and everything, if you don't bring kids with you when you go, I don't know how you like, I don't know how you go back for kids that later, like in the sense of like,
what's your pitch? Like I didn't want
what's
you
your
3 months
pitch?
Ago.
Like, I didn't want you on the team two or 3 months ago. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You weren't good enough for me because we were going to get some players, but now I want you. Like it's
almost
so weird
like,
cause it's
said coach didn't Google the roster, you know, like he didn't realize that the reason they were throwing big money at him was because the job sucks.
Players.
They don't have any players. And so you take seven or eight guys and you leave people high and dry. You might, I don't know. There's still like an ego involved. These are young men, still not full adults. You don't know. There is the draw. Maybe they got friends that went and they're telling them good things, or maybe it's just Big Ten football. I don't know. But if I'm sitting there and I'm like, wait, coach, you ghosted me 3 months ago. And now you're hearing like, oh my gosh, I was wrong. You know, I'm not answering that text. I don't know.
No. Or they're like, let's stay in touch. But then you don't stay in touch until, you know, like, it's a
until
strange.
Until after you wrap spring practice and realize the cupboard was a little more bare than you realized when you got there. Yeah.
Right. And I don't, you know, I mean, that's not just purely the JMU situation. I imagine this is taking place across the country. So,
yeah,
but it's such a weird thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we had, and look, the one thing that was exciting about Saturday and Chesney's energy is infectious for sure. He's out on the field behind the offense. He's fired up. We'll get to a funny story in a second, but they, you know, there are teams that had to cancel their spring game because they don't have enough players because of the portal right now. And I'm sure there's all kinds of reasons like that. Like we were just talking about the transfer, like kids who aren't here, kids, you know, early enrollee. Every program has a little bit different makeup of their roster. But, you know, we had heard Utah State canceled their spring game, for example. App State didn't have a spring game. And they didn't lose their coach, you know, like, so, I mean, everybody's going to have to treat this differently. And of course, now we have the rest of this week to just be freaking out. And we're not, thankfully, I think JMU fans have learned that even last week, it was good when we had an announcement of a player that, you know, was a contributor last year going in the portal. People didn't freak out the way that we did a few months ago. I think there's an understanding. As we always say, the portal works both ways. So portal's continuing to work for the basketball Dukes. Rob, I had a couple observations from the spring game. One is that our old pal Scott Rickers not prepared for the Chesney energy. The band administration was not prepared for Chesney's audibles at the time of the game. So on like the fourth series, he clearly decided like he wanted the offense to have to, this was the first series that I think Billy Atkins played, but he wanted them to have the offense to have to start backed up to the goal line, like at the 1 yard line, as if they were, you know, the ball had been down on a punt and they had to start at the one, and he wanted the band to play. And he was very clear. And actually the girl who was like the drum major in charge, she understood what Chesney was trying to get them to do, which is just like, play music,
make some noise, yeah,
be annoying, yeah. But then he had to call the directors over to be, and they were like, what's going on here? I don't understand. Like, it was just very funny. But that was kind of a fun sideline of this whole thing. And of course, I mean, obviously the probably the most significant thing of the whole game, or not from a football standpoint, but overall, was JMU did announce, as we talked about last week, Matt Roan as the new athletic director. And he came out at the beginning of the game. And obviously Jeff Bourne was celebrated during the game, made an honorary alumni, which I think is like the highest thing the Alumni Association can do. And we saw there's going to be some streets named for Bourne and, you know, there by the parking deck and Donna Harper as well, I think. So those were all cool. It was great to see the energy, just both, I felt like both teams. And then on the field, Rob, I mean, pretty clear. We saw when the offense had the ball, it was Dylan Morris at QB1. It was Morris, Barnett. Morris, yeah. Atkins, right? So like, at least in the first four series, you know, it's pretty clear that the pecking order was about what we thought at this moment in time. That's just a moment in time. And then we saw a little bit of JC Evans in the second half. I did think I really thought Barnett looked really comfortable with the running game. And I thought Morris looks like an incredibly accurate passer. You know, he had one where you were like, that's a long throw. It got broken up, but he didn't miss anything.
Well, I think unlike last year, we do have a presumptive favorite going in to August camp. Like, people are assuming this is Dylan Morris's job. I don't think Chesney's going to be as coy as we had last year. Maybe that relaxes Barnett and he just realizes like, okay, this is his time to mature and learn with the offense. And I still have very high hopes for him and think he's got a lot of potential. You know, maybe next year's a starter.
And the quickness is really there. If they want to do something different, or if they are forced to do something different, you know, by injury or circumstance in some way.
Like, there's a different offensive look you get from him.
There is. And actually, the one thing I came away, you can't read into play calling this week.
No,
I mean, there's nothing there. But the one thing I did think about with Morris, and then the most exciting part of this game for me was, I thought there were some guys on the defensive line that I am not familiar with right now, who flashed. And that is a position that I was, and not necessarily interested, but just curious, because I think I don't know what to expect, you know? So that was one thing. And then the other thing was just the pure skill position players, Rob. The two running backs, Petaway and Adai, and then to have Van Horst back in the mix. I mean, it was great to see Van Horst and Wayne Knight out there. Especially, I mean, in particular, Van Horst. that was awesome. But Adai and Pettaway are, we have not had, like, this is like Cardon Johnson, but with more shiftiness. But like that kind of speed. I like
the sound of that.
Yeah, you know, like that kind of speed. I mean, and then Cam Ross, is it Daniels, I think, the other receiver? I mean, just you, Taji Hudson made a play. There's some real talent at the skill positions and some real speed. And I actually laughed. The one thing I came away wondering from a play calling standpoint is, I don't think Chesney, I mean, I know they had Jalen Coker, the kid who's, you know, potential NFL prospect at receiver, but this is not, you know, no shade at Sluka, the Holy Cross quarterback, but like, this is a whole different set of weapons for this coaching staff to work with. I mean, I mean, you could tell that even in a spring game, the quickness, you know, and those guys look, they look like the real deal. I mean, it doesn't look like Jamie is going to be lacking for explosive players. So
that is great to hear.
Yeah.
You know, the receiving room last year was very good, but then obviously, you know, Surratt leaving in the offseason, transfer portal, that stinks. But it is, there's so many people nowadays in college football just transferring. Like, there's an opportunity to go out and get new guys. And still, JMU has done really well under a number of coaches, kind of recruiting under the radar receivers. I don't know why that is. I don't know what it is about the school or maybe like the state of Virginia or whatever, but they appear to just pull rabbits out of their hat again and then again and again.
Yeah. And I do, I think it's so funny, but just like last year, in a weird way, when we went into the season this time last year, what we were thinking about projecting into last season was we knew the O-line was going to be, if not like a massive strength, like there was at least some consistency there. They weren't going to be a negative, you know?
Yeah.
And we thought like, man, if they could, and we thought the running backs were going to be pretty good. And we just thought like, you know, if they get, you know, whoever gets those jobs as quarterback or receiver is going to be in good shape. And I feel a little bit the same way this year. You know, they have three or four guys that have been big contributors on the O-line that are still here. And they're being pushed by other newcomers, but it seems like there's guys up front who are going to, you know, there's going to be six or seven guys who are ready to play come fall. And therefore, like whoever plugs in at the skill position players is going to be okay, I think. So at least on offense, that, I mean, I didn't know what to make of the defense. I think they're missing more components on defense in terms of what we were talking about before. Like, there are some very young players. I mean, like extremely young, like you were saying, an early enrollee out there on defense. There are players who aren't even here yet who are transferring in on defense. So, you know, that was a little harder for me to draw conclusions on.
And you also have in college football nowadays, I would say defensive line, probably the most portaled player. So there's going to be movement all across the country. You know, unfortunately, you look at our history as JMU fans, you lose names that you think is going to be devastating, but then you bring in guys. So there's going to be a lot of movement on those interior line positions and the edge positions. If you can get 7 or 8 sacks in the G5, you're getting P5 offers in the next 2 weeks. It's a reality. Yeah. You know, it stinks, but that's how it goes. It just makes us more appreciative of the fact that Jalen Green, you know, stayed for his full time at JMU. But so I still expect some movement there, both in and out. You know. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then just good job by JMU all the way around. It was a pleasant experience, like no ticketing, no scan, you know, very little, like easy come, easy go. They had concessions open. You know, it was a fun day. Pretty good student turnout, all things considered. it was a beautiful, the weather helped a lot with that, obviously.
But this thing, like the spring game, I think this is the type of situation where the new AD can make his mark. He was really good in some of these engagement and community metrics and getting more sponsorship. To me, that translates into, okay, he now has a really good baseline to work with from JMU in terms of overall, you know, program support and funding. And if he can go out there and take that next step and engage more with the Valley and the non-student population, but then bring in, you know, just more students and more alums, maybe do outreach to season ticket holders. Like, I think he's going to make his mark in that way with things like this. I expect the spring game or, you know, meet the Dukes day, things that kind of seem like plug and play in the past. If you get somebody who's ambitious and creative, I'm really excited. I think this, it sounds like last Saturday was an absolute great time. Everybody I know has had the same impression you needed. That was just fun and weather helps, like you said, but I think this could be kind of the start of something with Jamie. When you're getting thousands of people back for a spring game, that's good. It's not quite to the level of packed house, but as you mentioned, never in a million years would we imagine they were drawing this many people for an average Saturday in the fall, let alone Saturday in April.
I didn't pay attention. So we were in town and we were doing the Mossy Creek stuff and, you know, we had some other things going on. So we kind of got there at game time. We got there a half hour early, but we didn't do any tailgating or anything. We had to park in Z lot or whatever you call it now, down by, you know, like, because Godwin Field lot was, or whatever it's called, F lot now, was a normal tailgate Saturday. Like that was like full on, like the trailer was there. The flags were up. Like the hardcore crew was out there. P lot, totally full. The deck full, like, you know, Godwin lot, all the lower lots were completely full. Now, I don't know how that works in terms of, you know, I assume that's also open to just campus on a Saturday. Like they don't close it all down the way they do for, I don't know. I actually don't know, P-Lot and Godwin Field and Godwin Lot, like, was just like a regular game day, like in terms of pretty significant tailgate setups and stuff, you know, bookstore going, we made our trip, you know, so it was a really fun day and you know, big thanks to JMU. It's a great day all the way around and a fun weekend.
It wouldn't shock me. People always talk about like, oh, they got to start doing, you know, live music on game days. And I don't think they need to do that. I think the Saturdays in the fall speak for themselves and we've got our own culture and it's organic. I do think for the spring game, if you paired that with some sort of, you know, student concert or festival on one of the big lots, you've got the potential to really have it blow up over the next 2 to 5 years.
Well, yeah. And I think pairing it with, I mean, we saw a little bit of that this weekend with baseball and lacrosse, you know, or softball lacrosse, like pairing it with the other events is pretty good too. And maybe timing that out even a little more intentionally in some ways. So people can get around to those games. Cause that's a good segue to lacrosse won their senior day game 17-8 over Vanderbilt, which is conference opponent Vanderbilt. in their final game did see Isabel Peterson was offensive player of the week in the American and I'm forgetting who, Parisi, I think, probably getting that wrong, but they had their defensive player of the week as well. So congrats to them. They are, what are they now? They're 17th in the country as of the new poll in the top 20. They close out the regular season this weekend at ODU. Big game for the Royal Rivalry. But more importantly, they just cannot afford another loss.
They're very bubblicious right now.
They are very bubblish right now. And they can't afford a loss to someone like ODU. And then they need to go and play Florida again in the American final at worst. They may even need to win the American final. But we'll see. So, you know, all the typical Northwestern, Notre Dame, Boston College, Syracuse, Michigan in the top five. But North Carolina conspicuously absent, which is really JMU's, you know, the big win JMU's hanging their hat on this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, pulling for them and they can absolutely win the conference and win the conference tournament and get in the big dance. There's no, I mean, they have 3 losses on the season. They're not falling apart here, but would just like to see them keep playing well and carry this into the postseason with a, I don't know. Jamie's got to be coming close to clinching this Royal Rivalry this year. So we'll see. But the better news, Rob, is we got to talk about the Diamond Dukes. What is going on here? Across the board, right? So softball went to App this weekend and swept the Mountaineers. Not that that wasn't expected, but they really just handled their business. And they have 2 series left. They are now, looking at the standings, softball is now tied for 4th in the Sun Belt with Troy. And they're both a game back of South Owl and 2 back of Texas State. As expected, Louisiana kind of running away with things at 17-1 in the conference. But JMU's right in the mix, and they now got a two-game lead. You know, them and Troy in that 4-5 slot are now a couple games up on Coastal and ULM and others. So they only have two series left. They go to Georgia Southern this weekend. That is Georgia Southern, who is 6-12 in the conference. So you expect a series win. You hope for a series sweep. And then they come home for their last series of the season is Coastal, who's a couple games back of them. And they've started to find a few things. The lineup's hitting. And I think the best thing of all, Rob, I saw Liz Humphrey is now behind only Jalen Ford in saves, I think. Like, they're using her out of the pen now really well.
Yeah. It was stunning to me, though, when you look at it. I think the number was like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And it just shows how different softball and baseball are. And that's because you've got these arms in softball that just complete game, complete game, complete game. So 9 or 10 saves might not sound that impressive if you're coming from like a baseball perspective.
Right.
But it really is the fact that like you don't normally have situations where you're pulling your ace or a good player. So for Alyssa to step in and do that, that's a very unique role. And, you know, we're big fans of hers. So it's cool to see her kind of find this niche that she's operating in and doing it really, really well.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me, you remember Megan Good's freshman season, Rob, when Jalen Ford was still there, that great team that went to the regional. Yeah. And Jalen Ford had been a star, right? I mean, she had just been like the best player on the team forever. And by the end of that season, she had kind of morphed into this role that Humphrey's playing now, where she's like the leader and she sort of bails them out when they need it. And does all these different things for them on the mound while Megan Good, like, you know, threw 1,800 miles an hour. And that's a little bit what I feel like with Fleet and List right now. Like, you know, they're riding the other pitchers and then, you know, they bring Humphrey in who she's not going to walk anybody late in the game. Like, she doesn't make mistakes late in the game anymore. She's a vet at this point.
Steady Eddie. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, and I think, also, you know, she comes in and is a little bit of a change of pace. If you've been, you know, flailing away at hard pitching all day, and then you bring somebody in who throws a little bit more off speed, it's just a good thing. It kind of reminds me, they just feel like they're coming together and they're getting hitting from Reed Butler. They're getting hitting from KK Mathis, Hensler, Madison Edwards, like up and down the lineup, they're getting production now. So I'm getting really hopeful with only 2 weeks left in the season. Before the tournament. I mean, really, they have six games left and they should expect to win four. I'm sure they hope to win five, and that would put them probably in really good position going into the postseason. So pretty cool for softball. And then the same thing, the more ridiculous thing and the biggest surprise this spring, Rob, has been baseball, who swept Georgia Southern over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. This has just been weird. Like I think a lot of people were accustomed to JMU just kind of hanging around and being in the mix and almost like fool's gold with baseball, but they've got an opportunity now. Like they've got what, Arkansas State, they've got to play South Owl and Marshall and Troy.
They host Maryland tonight. By the time most of you are listening to this, Tuesday, they are hosting Maryland at 6, which is kind of cool. Just in a one-off, but yeah, they go to South Owl. And then they play Arkansas State at home. And Marshall, and then they go to Troy at the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, and they have a few, I think they have a Georgetown game in there. They have Georgetown and Virginia Tech in there.
USC Upstate and Virginia Tech.
Oh, don't forget about that. Yes. How could I forget? Yeah.
But it's just like, if they win two of these series, they're squarely on the bubble.
They're a game out of second place in the Sun Belt right now. Like, there's three teams tied for second at 11-7. That's Coastal, Troy, and Southern Miss. And JMU is 10-8. Like, only Louisiana is at 15-3 is really, I mean, the Sun Belt's really good and JMU's really good.
Well, this is where you've got the conference RPI, where if you get to a certain number, it's the same thing we always rally against in basketball, where it's like,
correct.
Oh, you don't want to take these teams that finish fourth or fifth in the ACC and give them in over mid-major. JMU in baseball for Sunbelt it's opportunity to kind of be on the other side of that equation.
Well, because it feels like the Sun Belt is getting, they're probably going to get three for sure. Yeah. They might get four or five, depending on how the tournament breaks. So if you're in, you know, that's where JMU is, like, you know.
And it's a good enough league in terms of conference strength where if you get to like 18 wins in conference,
yeah,
people aren't going to look much further. They're just going to go, oh, yeah, well, 18 wins.
That's a good team. Good.
Yeah, they're not going to dissect it and be like, oh, you know, where'd they come from? You're just going to kind of get the benefit of the doubt. That is not something our stick and ball sports ever got in the old conference.
No, and it really does feel like if you finished – hypothetically, I mean, with JMU sitting one game back of the three teams that are tied for second, so technically in fifth place, like if you finish in the Sun Belt in the top four in the regular season and you make the Sun Belt semis, you're probably getting in. Like, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean JMU is going to get there to both of those things, but like, you know, if you finish in the top four in the regular season and you don't fall on your face in the tournament, you're probably getting in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
They're not going to leave Coastal out or Troy out or Southern Miss out, who are the three teams tied one game ahead of JMU. Like if those teams stay in the top four and get to the, you know, do okay in the Sun Belt tournament, those are the kind of teams that they just get in. It's like giving ACC bids for basketball.
You kind of get a free pass.
Yeah, you kind of were like, oh, they're good. That's Coastal Carolina. They're in. I mean, you know,
Sun Belt is the fourth best conference in RPI this year.
Yeah.
That gets you the benefit of the doubt and then some. You know, if you finish, like we said, 17, 18 wins, you're going to be on the right side of that line without people really digging in much further. And we'll scream and yell when it happens to others, but we will silently applaud and think like, yes, this is the way the system should work when it works out for the Duke's favor.
Yeah. But there's no easy, you know, everything's tough. I mean, South Alice, a couple games behind JMU, Georgetown, I was starting to think Arkansas State. It is interesting. Arkansas State's the one bad team in the conference, so to speak. Marshall's down there. Yeah. So JMU plays Arkansas State, Marshall. Yeah, I mean,
and Troy, like if you sweep,
yeah, those I teams, mean, if they,
and this is what's always hurt JMU in the past. You have a like last year where they sweep Louisiana, but then you come up and you lose a couple series you shouldn't lose. Like, yep. They need to take care of business, and this is the next step for JMU baseball. Is you need to start not just winning one or two games in these lesser teams. You need to sweep. You need to just take care of business. You know, like It's not that daunting of a schedule. This is a schedule with a lot of wins on it on paper.
It sure is. I mean, they have four series left in the Sun Belt, and three of them are against teams below them currently in the standings. So they have, and then the others are Georgetown, who's not, you know, Georgetown, Virginia Tech, and Maryland in these one-off, you know, the weekday series are kind of a toss-up no matter who you're playing, just because of the way the pitching sets up. But regardless, yes, I mean, the Sun Belt in particular, those are the series that matter. So they have 12 games left. I mean, you think like if they could get eight, you're right. If they got eight of those, that would put them at 18 wins, Rob.
That's looking good.
That would be really, really something to write home about. I mean, that would be really good and really set them up well for the postseason. So just exciting times and just can't encourage everybody enough to go watch baseball when you get the chance. I know they're on the road. Well, they're home tonight for most of you, which is fun if you can go, but they're on the road this weekend at South Al. They will be home that first weekend in May for Arkansas State, which should be winnable games for JMU. So they're home those two weekends, actually first two weekends in May. So if you're down there for graduation, they're hosting Arkansas State and Marshall.
So. Yeah. Now what is going on? Like the Sun Belt website has them playing USC Upstate, and the JMU website has them playing Georgetown on that night. So
I'm confused on
one of the two.
One of the two. I wasn't overthinking. I know we're both looking at different things, but oh well. In any case, go watch the baseball team. USC Upstate, I think, significantly better than Georgetown at baseball.
Yes.
Historically, but I don't, what do I know? So yeah. But that's pretty fun. Rob, all right, well, let's have some fun tonight. Take us to the most random overtime we have come up with in quite some time.
quite some time. This is kind of an old school, like back to our completely random, let's do something that makes no sense whatsoever over time, which are my favorite ones. And Todd, I was thinking tonight we could just do our starting lineup of fictitious athletes, meaning I don't know what that means. I threw this
idea out there. Right?
And a coach.
And so a coach. Just,
and a coach. I don't know if that means starting five, starting nine, starting 11, no idea, or whatever, one from each, but just an opportunity for us to sit down and kind of talk about some of our favorite athletes from worlds that don't exist, books, movies, television shows, and then we'll try to come up as we go. We'll come up with some sort of concept and then declare victory after we choose all of our players. I don't know. And we can do this collaboratively.
Okay, yeah, because I have like 30 things that I wrote down here.
Okay, cool. So now, how do we want to approach this? Like, do we want to just say like pure athleticism, battle of the stars,
fictitious sport? Oh, no, no. This is just like whichever way you want to go, right? Random, so at least a starting five plus a coach, plus I have a bonus, like a support staff person, but.
Oh, I like
I was thinking of
like a corner man or
like a sports psychologist. Yes.
Oh, I see where we're going with this one. Yes.
And I even have an owner on here, but
Rebecca or otherwise.
Yes. Rebecca was my owner. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll start there. So the owner of this fictitious, whatever it is, I assume we're choosing Rebecca from Ted Lasso.
We are. Yes. That's our owner.
Is this going to be a owner. Ted Lasso heavy overtime?
I don't actually think so. No, I think Rebecca was my only one that I, for me at least, she was the only one. I have to say she became arguably my favorite character on that show, like through the run of the show. But yeah, no, I didn't have any, so you can go with all the Ted Lasso you want, Rob, because that was the only,
she was my only one. Well, if you went owner, let's kind of go down, not the pecking order, but
yeah.
From owner to coach. For me, the coach came down to Ted Lasso versus Eric Taylor. And and I don't know which way we want to go.
Well, you go however you want, because I picked a different coach. So I want John Candy for Cool Runnings. So
wow. That's a curveball, but that might trump both of my, like, I feel like Coach Taylor, Friday Night Lights, is such a middle-aged podcaster, you know, trope at this point. Like, I kind of like the John Candy situation.
Well, yeah, my general theme is I did choose characters from things that would be culturally inappropriate in 2024 largely. So yes that was the start. Yeah, the John Candy one just really made me happy, sorry. But both Coach Taylor and Ted Lasso are obviously like actually better, objectively better coaches, I would say.
I don't know. I mean, he climbed quite a mountain for the, what was it? Jamaican Bob's. What's his actual name?
I forget.
Strike. Yeah. It's not fictitious. That's real.
Oh yeah. He is a real person.
He's a real guy.
Yeah. He's based on a real person. I don't know that the real person is as generally gregarious, decent and reformed as John Candy in Cool Runnings. Right. Like, I don't know.
Whatever. Nope. All right. I'm calling an audible. We're going back to Coach Taylor. I know it's cliche, but so Coach Taylor for coach. All right. Now, moving on. I don't know what we do. Point guard, pitcher, football player. I got nothing.
What player do you want to start your team with? I do have a side tangent at some point about a particular position, but yeah.
I mean, for me, it's obvious. Yeah. It's Bud from Air Bud.
Oh, I did have an idea.
It's a golden retriever that can do everything.
And so I actually did not choose Air Bud or Teen Wolf. These are not real athletes.
I'll disagree on both. Air Bud, the original Air Bud. I've seen all those movies. My youngest son, James, was obsessed with them. So I saw Air Buddies. I saw the Crystal one. I saw the all the same plot, all the same thing. I don't know. I've got a soft spot for golden retrievers. I'm going to battle with Air Bud every week, no matter what the game. Although I didn't really like the soccer one. The soccer one was kind of lame. But the original Air Bud, golden retriever that shoots jumpers, sign me up. I got him.
Nice. I like it. Okay, that's good. I got to start my team with a catcher, Rob. And what I did realize is that catchers are the best.
Yes.
The best in all fictional settings. Catchers are the heart of whatever the fiction is, right? So I think I have to go with Crash Davis on this.
Over Ham Porter from Samlot?
Well, that's what I meant. So we've got Ham Porter. We got Dottie Henson as a catcher, right, from League of Their Own.
But right, also, we got
John C. Reilly in For Love of the Game is the catcher, who's just magnificent. You know, he's the one who, like, you know, he's struggling at the plate, but the Costner character makes him stay in, and then he gets the hit. You know, like just all the catchers are good, right? Like, they're all the best. So,
I like the Crash Davis pick.
Personally. Yeah, Crash Davis sort of had that's to me. Yeah, I mean, that is my favorite sports movie. I think
it's a great one.
Yeah, and that's my sports psychologist. There is Annie, right? Like,
yes,
the Susan Sarandon character from Bull Durham is, you know, she's got to be around the club, right?
And also some of Bull Durham has the best one-liners or just like the funny things that if you played sports, you remember, like when they're all on the mound and they're talking about the wedding gifts or things like that, or Annie's kind of monologue, or I mean, not Crash Davis's monologue. What he likes, like, it's so,
some days you win, some days you lose, some days it rains.
Yeah. But to me, that best captures what it's like. And obviously, neither you nor I were ever professional athletes. Mm-mm. But if you played sports, growing up, played high school sports, the stuff you remember and that you're more nostalgic about, or at least I am, is the off the field stuff. The sleepovers the night before, or the bus rides, or team meals. And Bull Durham does the best job of capturing kind of like that lifestyle and the weird aspect of like bonding with your teammates, but how it's also kind of fleeting as people are coming and going. And yeah, that movie absolutely holds up.
It's so good. Yeah.
Where do you stand on Field of Dreams? Are you a Field of Dreams guy or no?
I do love Field of Dreams. I have to say, one of the hardest things in doing this, when you told me this category, Rob, was that Kevin Costner and who's the other? There are a couple guys who just are in so many sports movies.
Well, Kevin Costner, that was his
thing. Kevin Costner. Oh, and Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
Also, because I want to pick Sly Stallone as my goalkeeper from Victory. So, like, I mean, you know, but there's so many, because I love Roy McAvoy from Tin Cup is another guy I really wanted to pick in this, right? Like there's so much good Costner here.
Or Cheech as the caddy.
Yeah, or Cheech, yes. I do love Field of Dreams. I do love The Natural too, which I feel like you almost have to pick The Natural in a starting lineup, right?
I have Roy Hobbs on my list.
You have Roy Hobbs. Okay, good. Yes. Good.
I'm a big Field of Dreams guy, and I know
me too. That's I'm semi-controversial. Pro Field of Dreams. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love, and The Natural too. It's a very sepia toned look back at baseball and everything, but I don't know. I love them both. They're both great movies. Saw them both in the theater because I'm ancient and I don't know.
The Tom Berenger. Sorry. I forgot another catcher. The Tom Berenger catcher in Major League.
Major League. Yes.
Is also fantastic. I think Clue Haywood is the actual pick for the team, right? The guy who sneezes and looks like a party favor.
There's just so many options from the baseball world.
That's what I mean. The baseball is like overwhelming. So I'll try to get away from baseball now, other than maybe one more book pick. Oh, well, are we going to pick the Jet from The Sandlot, Rob?
Yeah, Benny the Jet.
I
could go with that.
Rodriguez, right?
I could go with Benny the Jet or Squints, although Squints, you talk about things that are maybe not appropriate looking back. There's a certain scene there where you're like, ooh, this is kind of not even borderline, but
No, this is a Title IX violation.
Right? Yeah, this is definitely a Me Too situation. So don't want to really, maybe for that reason, we will go with Benny the Jet over Squints.
So the one thing on Benny the Jet, Rob, is did you have a player that you played with or against, you know, growing up, either youth league or high school, did you have a player who was like just so not even like not just like above, not better than everyone else, but like three levels better than everyone else?
Playing a different game?
Yeah, just playing a different game. Like, I was trying to think if you,
I mean, I had to guard Jesse Hubbard in lacrosse senior year. He went on, I think he's been surpassed, but he went on to Princeton and I believe at one point was very high up on their all-time scorers list, won multiple national championships. And I remember guarding him. He played at St. Albans in the field by the cathedral overlooking Georgetown.
Right.
And he was like 6'3", 6'4", and fast. And he would, they would just give him the ball and he would back up like 15, 20 yards and run right at me and be like, what are you going to do, kid? And just steam. And it was like, I think we held him to like 4 or 5 goals. And that was, it's 30 something years later. And I'm talking about it as if I don't know the exact number. And I know the exact number. I'm like, he scored a lot of goals, but we were like, we held him to that. He was up there. I had guys on my team that were like that. I was very squarely in the role player category, but I had a couple of high school Americans on my team and I played against guys that were, you know, like you see guys that are going to be big time D1 talent. And you had this, I mean, your quarterback, Greg Maddux, went on JMU. Yep. Like it's different between playing with guys that are going to go play in college. And we had a lot of those that I played against who go, and that's at any level, that is an accomplishment. But then you have guys that go to the top schools and that's another level. Then you have guys that go to the top schools and star for those schools. And Jesse Hubbard happened to be a guy.
Like it was one of those.
It was one of those. Yeah.
That's it. I played a couple games. I did play a couple pickup summer games with my high school crew basketball at Nottoway Park in Vienna against Grant Hill.
He was okay.
He was okay. I will say in that case, like I was never matched, you know, I was never matched up with Grant Hill and it's very much like pickup in the summer. It's not serious. The one that really stands out to me is my freshman year. We played against Charlie Garner, the running back who went to Tennessee and then later played for like the Eagles and the Raiders. He played at Stewart High School, what's now Justice in Falls Church. And like, I wasn't on the team as a freshman. I mean, I was a freshman player, right? But I didn't play. But we watched for 4 years of my being in high school. Like we watched the tape of that game just so we could all watch Charlie Garner. Like he ran back like at least 2 kickoffs for a touchdown and a punt. Like I think we won the game, but like no one was tackling this kid. Like that kind of thing. So the Rodriguez thing just made me think of that. Like where, and there's a point, I think we all probably played against someone growing up who's like, oh, that's the difference between the person who's at the Masters and the rest of us, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, Bernie and I coached basketball after college in McLean. And it was one of those things, like we were driving down the street and they said like coaches needed. And it was a third grade team. Mm-hmm. And we had our draft and after tryouts, like we just took random kids, whatever. It's all their dads. We don't know anybody. And after 2 or 3 games, we got a call from the commissioner being like, hey, Rob, Rick, you guys got an illegal roster. We need to have a call. Oh. So we called, and we had this kid that was just lighting people up and, you know, just literally third graders. And he's step back threes and, you know, going with both hands and stuff like that.
Is he too old or something?
No. And so we're like, oh, well that, and they said, hey, Kevin's too old. And we're like, or they said, no, Kevin's the wrong age. And we're like, well, that makes sense. You know? And they're like, yeah, he's too young. We're like, what? So we call the parent and the parents are like, sorry, you know, what we did was wrong. He had played last year and he was so much better than the kids in his age that he got frustrated and, you know, so we just signed him up. And the commissioner's like, dude, you can always play up. Just tell us it's fine.
Okay.
So we go on the rest of the season. And this kid was just tremendous. And he would always like come to practice with older brothers and sisters and cousins. And he's telling stories of like, oh, you know, my uncle played at Notre Dame football. And you're like, whatever. So like this kid could really play basketball in third grade. And me and Rick were like, this is a different sort of athlete. Yes. And, you know, you coach him for 1 year. We win the championship. Sweetest kid. Youngest guy on the team. Youngest guy in the league. We're up big in the championship. And all this kid is doing is trying to get the one boy on our team who hadn't scored a bucket. And he's like faking guys out and then just run over and handing it to this guy. And the kid scored. And you would have thought this guy had just hit a triple-double himself. So whatever. So years later, I'm driving home from work. And I hear people talking on the radio about this guy who's local legend, who's going to be the then Redskins, now Washington Football Team's practice squad quarterback. And it was Kevin Hogan, who went to start Gonzaga and then went to Stanford and set all these records after Andrew Luck and went on. Like, he was a backup or practice squad quarterback for Washington, I think for Denver. So it's not like, it wasn't like this guy was Peyton Manning or.
But it's the Patrick difference Mahomes. Between a young pro and everybody else.
I kid you not. In third grade, we were like, this kid is special. He's just an athlete. And that wasn't even his chosen sport. He went on to be this like football stud. And you look him up, like he's got all sorts of records at Gonzaga where a guy, I think they were beaten by a guy named Caleb Williams after that. Terrible school, by the way. Paul Six, way better. Go Panthers. But then he went on, set a bunch of records at Stanford. But like, it makes you appreciate like how gifted these guys are when you're around somebody who, like you said, they're just different. It's not like, they're a little bit better. They're just next level.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
well, who do you also want to pick for your team,
wasn't it?
No, it's a good one. It's a good one.
I don't know. Like I've kind of got a soft spot for Tim Riggins.
Yeah.
Just in terms of a guy I'd like to go to war with. But then I'm also like, it's also a guy that could blow up your team, but I'm going to give him the nod anyway. I would like Tim Riggins on my squad.
Okay. I like it. I like it. I think I got to pick Jimmy Chitwood here for my last. I was torn between Jimmy Chitwood and Jesus Shuttlesworth here, Rob. I actually thought, so Ray Allen has to be the best. That has to be the best athlete who's been in a movie not playing himself. Like actually playing a character in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Like I was thinking like, okay, well, you could pick like Shaq or MJ or LeBron or whatever for all these like goofy movies, but they're just being themselves, right? They're not a main dramatic character in the movie. But Chitwood in, and by the way, Norman Dale, not my coach. We need to practice with the basketball.
We're not running through chairs.
Right, exactly. So,
Jimmy Chitwood, though, at the town meeting.
The town meeting.
They just say, you know, when he comes in and says, I'm thinking it's about time that I'm going to play some basketball. One more thing, you know, I play, coach stays, coach goes, I go. And then when they do the redoing of the vote.
And then everybody's and like,
coach stays.
I want to vote again.
Yeah, the old lady. And then he just rips it up, coach stays. And then the music, which is the greatest score of any if not sports movie, just movie in general. When the music picks up. And no, Jimmy.
Also, Chitwood, I don't think he misses a shot in the entire film.
Oh, I think he was like 16 for 16 in the final game.
Yeah, like he really doesn't miss. Like that's why I would need him on my team here.
Yeah, I mean, even though technically real guy, but I think we can give an asterisk for that because I had him too. Like that's to me.
Okay,
that's
good.
The quintessential. He's only a star because of the movie, maybe in small town Indiana, but geez, it's been 60, 70 years. So now that's rounding out. That's pretty good. So what do we got? We got Rebecca, team owner, coach Eric Taylor, Air Bud, Crash Davis, Annie's sports psychologist, Benny the Jet, Tim Riggins at fullback, because we got to have a fullback on our team.
Yep.
And then Jimmy Chitwood, like I'd go to war with that squad. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like, so in my problematic team, Rob, Jess from Bend It Like Beckham, who's the Perminda Nagra character, who's the actual best player on the team. And speaking, you know, like not that was pretty good. Yeah. And then I did like Jamie Tartt can be the number nine anytime he wants to be on our team. Right.
I love Jamie Tartt. That's you talk about Rebecca being a great character. I really like Jamie Tartt, particularly the episode with where he teaches Roy how to ride a bicycle.
Yes.
I thought they did a great job.
Oh, that was the best.
The evolution of his character. I thought, you know, it's kind of accelerated because of the way that the timing of the series works. But I did think they did a good job of kind of explaining how his a-hole nature was due to the fact that he had a pretty abusive father.
Correct.
So I thought that was an interesting character arc, and I really like that. So I'd take him for sure.
Yeah. And then I had a bunch of like, well, I guess I had one. I think I've talked about the book, The Art of Fielding, on here before, Rob.
I love that book. Yeah.
Yeah. The shortstop in that book, though, was like the star player. But then I did have a bunch of like random individual sports, so to speak, or X Games type characters.
Okay.
So, I mean, Bodie from Point Break, you know, Swayze. Yeah. It's pretty tough. Anne Marie from
Blue Crush. I was going to go Johnny Utah from Point Break. But
yeah, exactly. Anne Marie from Blue Crush, the other surfer. Stroker Ace. So, you know, if we're going to do race car driving,
go right? Way we back. Got
Burt Reynolds. Yes. I mean, you could put Ricky Bobby in there too, I guess. Marcus, this was the one that I wanted. This was my Kevin Costner choice, was Marcus from American Flyers, which is the best cycling movie ever. And Maggie Fitzgerald from... Maggie from the girl boxer who gets beat up. A Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the toughest one of all. Right. So,
yeah.
And Harkin Banks from Hot Dog for the skiing. I mean, Shannon Tweed's in the movie, Rob. So it's important that we include Harkin Banks. So,
and we didn't choose Rocky. I don't know how that.
That was a hard one for me because maybe it's just because I'm like, I don't know the. Yeah, I don't know. I love Rocky the movie.
It's because you hate Philly.
It is because I hate Philly. It's definitely because I hate Philly. Yeah. It's also because it's like not a real story, but sort of a real story. Like, I don't know. It's just
loosely weird. Based on.
Loosely based. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know.
They have a statue right by the art museum of a fake guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a cool statue and it is a good museum, but we shall see.
Yeah, this was a fun category, Rob. And actually,
went better than expected. That was less of a train wreck than I thought it would be. That was fun.
And we also have another overtime already scheduled for next week, which is going to be really good and actually Sunbelt related. So
I like this. Kind of getting back to our roots where we mix it up, some Jamie stuff, and then just go completely off the rails for the last half of the podcast. So this is what's fun for me.
And knock on wood, but we haven't had any technical difficulties this evening. If we don't in the next 30 seconds, that will be great.
Yeah, so, could be a perfect game. Perfect game for us, complete game.
We'll see. Well, Rob, I don't have anything else this week. Do you?
No, I got nothing, man. This was fun. Enjoyed talking to you as always. And I hope everybody out there has a good week. And people that made the spring game, hope they had a great time and looking forward to it being even bigger in future years.
Yeah, go fishing. Go talk to the guys in Monster Creek. All right. Good to talk to you, Rob. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you.
Go Dukes.
I saw your face. Say goodbye to the old me.
Came out of nowhere, didn't give no warning.
Pedal so heavy, like a two most wanted. And I
don't know what you're doing tonight, but I'll be your shotgun rider till the day I die. Smoke out.